Your conference is being recorded.
Welcome everyone. This is our second conference call for RP101 Plan for Success. And today I'm actually hosting the call from the unceded traditional territories of the Sechelt First Nations in southwestern BC. I'm visiting with my granddaughter, my parents, so they got four generations together. So it's kind of it's special. So I'd like to, if you're in the presentation or on a computer, that's great if you open the presentation slides. If not, no worries, we'll talk through everything. So last week, what you would have done is explored planning from what we call an outcomes-based perspective. And what that means is that we plan to achieve benefits of recreation through the work that we do. So we try and help youth in our communities gain a sense of belonging through recreation. Through some of the sport or activities we do, we might help people build confidence. We might improve physical and mental health and help people in our communities make stronger connections to each other, to their culture, and to the land. So those are some of the benefits that we try and achieve through recreation. This week, we're going to look at some different ways to frame planning that you do in recreation. And you might remember last week we talked about all sorts of different things we planned, and we started off the call with, you know, even things that we plan personally in our day-to-day lives. So planning is something that we do, but we don't always have a process for doing it. So I think what you'll find is this process might help you. So today we're going to do a quick round of introductions. Then we'll look at the planning processes and frameworks that are shown in slides 18 to 26. And then we'll talk a bit more about different types of planning. We'll dig into them a little bit. So let's begin with a quick round of introductions. And I think I'm the only one in the chat, so I won't bother posting anything in the chat then. I'll just make sure if you need me to repeat the question, just let me know. So if you can introduce yourself, tell us, you know, who you are, where you are, what your role in recreation is, and then share one thing that takes place in a planning process that you believe is always important to do and why. And I'll go first so as not to put anybody on the spot, but we'll start with the first round in the order that you joined the call. So we'll go from me to Ethan to Megan to Stephanie to Nathan. And then the next time around, we'll start with Megan and then the next time with Stephanie so Ethan, you're not always on the spot, and Nathan, you're not always last. So introducing yourself and one thing in a planning process that's important to do and why. So here's my example. You guys know who I am. I'm Caroline. I'm been involved in Recreation North training program. This is like 5 years now. And when I do planning, I believe it's always important to put my plan down on paper. Often I have things planned in my head, but that makes it more difficult to explain to other people. And if something changes, then I don't have it recorded what I first started doing. So for me, something that's important in a planning process to do is writing it down or making a diagram on paper. So Ethan, how about yourself? Can you introduce yourself and share one thing when you're planning that's important to do?
Hi, my name is Ethan Hudlin from Kokoloktuk. I'm the recreation coordinator for the hamlet of Kokoloktuk, and one thing that I think is important when planning is getting input from the community, and why I think that is because so that we can run programs that are in best interest of the community.
Awesome. That is so important. Thank you for sharing that, Ethan, because really, you know, if we don't get input from the community, we don't know what they value or what's important or what we might not be doing, right? So thank you for sharing that. Megan, let's go to you to introduce yourself and share one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do and why.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Megan Hashi. I am a program coordinator with Sport and Recreation with the Government of Nunavut. I'm located in Baker Lake. Something that I think is important is making sure that everyone involved has a copy of the plan. I think that a plan with even just two people needs to be easily accessible for everyone, rather than just having like one or two people having access to it. I think everyone should be able to see what the plan is and who's going to be affected and everything like that.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Megan. And sometimes with a more complicated plan, as you know, we might do like a one-page visual. So with the Sports as Collectivity and Recreation Framework for Nunavut, you know, that plan itself is what, 16 to 20 pages long. So we created a one-page visual so that you can kind of see it in one page. So that's another way when you have a more complicated plan that you can actually make sure that everyone has access to it. So thanks for mentioning that. That is very important. Stephanie, how about yourself? Could you introduce yourself and then share one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do and why?
My name is Stephanie Katia. I'm out of Enterprise. I'm the recreation coordinator here. One thing that I think is very important is respecting each other's cultures, because in our community we have there's different religions, there's different cultures, there's different languages, and we're only about 101 people in Enterprise. However, the cultures are very diverse, and I think that is something that is very important to teach the kids, to respect each other's cultures and religions. And in order for me to introduce these, I would like to connect with the different cultures in the community and get advice from them, and also from the other kids that are participating, if their parents or grandparents or guardians are comfortable with allowing the children, not just the children, but adults, elders, anyone to understand each other's cultures and religion. And I think that's very important.
That's great. Thanks, Stephanie. And a plan, like if you do what Ethan suggested and get input from the community and what Megan suggested and make sure that everyone has a plan, that plan can actually reflect the diversity in your community, and it can help people understand each other's cultures that way. So if you plan in a way that's respectful of the community, hopefully your plan reflects that as well. So that's really important. Thank you so much for sharing that. Nathan, how about yourself? Would you like to introduce yourself and share one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do?
Yeah, hi. My name is Nathan Wilson. I'm the recreation leader in Fort Liard. And mine was pretty similar to Megan's. I think communication to all parties, like, involved in whatever you're planning is important. So, like, you know, making sure everybody knows, like, what the latest piece of information is regarding the plan, whether it's like an event or like, you know, a program that you're going to be putting on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, you have to, a plan's no good if it just sits on the shelf, right? I've heard of it before, like, there's an acronym for it. But if you keep people updated or involved or aware of how the plan's progressing and what's going on as far as the plan, then that's another way for them to feel part of that overall process. So really important to do that too, because then your plan becomes alive, right? And it means something for people across the community. So thank you for sharing that. Thanks everybody for your introductions. It's great to hear the different perspectives that you bring to planning. And as you can see from your introductions, planning consists of a series of different activities, whether it's getting input from your community, sharing what you've planned, reflecting different cultures, keeping everyone updated on how the plan's going, or making sure it's in writing. Those are all different activities that are involved. And planning becomes easier for you and the people you work or volunteer with when you have a common understanding of the activities. As you know, Megan mentioned, make sure everyone has a copy of the plan. But also when people understand sort of what goes into planning. So if they're part of that planning, that they know it's not just something that you've randomly done and you've randomly decided to run a disc golf program instead of basketball or something like that. So it is important that people understand, you know, how to approach planning and that there's different frameworks for it, and those frameworks are shown in some of the slides. And those are especially important if you want to reflect different cultural sort of perspectives or values as well. So regardless of
how Karen.
Simple.
Hi, this is Kelly. We have Kelly and Nadine and Serena here from Comedon.
Awesome. I did not hear the beep. I just saw you in the chat, but I wasn't sure if you were on the call or not. So thanks for interrupting me. So Kelly, Nadine, and did you say Serena or Dana?
Serena. Dana's on vacation this week.
Awesome. So would you just like to quickly do like a 5-second introduction to who you guys are? Because I have people from, as Ethan from Kugluktuk, Megan from Baker Lake, Stephanie from Enterprise, and Nathan from Fort Liard. So maybe, Kelly, could you just introduce the three of you quickly?
Yeah, for sure. So it's Kelly, Nadine, and Serena, and we are with Kwamandam First Nation, and we work in the REF department, the Youth Recreation Department, and we are Youth Recreation Support Workers.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, and I'm so sorry that I wasn't aware that you guys were on the phone. Sometimes it doesn't tell me who joins. It just gives a beep, and sometimes I miss those beeps. So thank you for jumping in.
Not a problem at all. I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you did. Thank you. So as I was saying, some of our plans are very simple, like what we're going to do for a program, and some of them are complicated, like Ethan, you might have to do an annual plan, or Nathan, you might have to, too, for the whole year. And so those can be a lot more complicated. But it really doesn't matter how easy or how hard it is. A plan should always show what you want to accomplish or what you want to do and how you're going to get there. So as slides 18 and 19 point out, you can sort of adjust how you create and present your plan to the, depending on your local situation, the community, or the purpose or reason for planning. So these slides show, I've sort of broken the planning process into three steps, and you can think of REC, and those steps stand for it. So REC stands for Ready, Engage, and Create. So I think of the first step is about getting ready to plan. So you're finding the right people, you're finding time and money, you're figuring out who needs to be involved. You're deciding what activities you might do for planning, like if you're going to have a community gathering over supper or something like that. The next one is engaging or getting people involved in the planning. So Ethan, you mentioned getting input from the community, listening to their stories, figuring out the different cultural perspectives. So that's the engage piece or step two. And then creating the plan is the writing the plan, validating it, so sharing it back with the community, making sure the community knows of it, like Megan pointed out as well, and perhaps following through and implementing it, and making sure people know the progress, like Nathan pointed out. So you can see that you've identified different parts of the planning process. So I think I just answered the question I was going to ask you, So maybe I won't ask you the question. I was going to ask you what you mentioned was important in planning. Which step was it? So let's just quickly go around and see if I got the right step there. So, Megan, you said it was important to share the plan with people who were involved. Would that be part of the ready, the engage, or the create step?
I think it would be part of both the ready and the engage step.
Exactly. Yeah, so the ready because you're getting them aware of what you're going to do. Is that sort of what you're thinking? Like so that they all know what
you're
happening?
Yeah, so you're having them aware that something is going to be happening and what will be happening so that people are prepared and are able to be involved, and then having some tech issues.
That's okay, no worries. I think in some ways, what you suggested, which is making sure everyone's aware of the plan and has a copy, is actually part of all three steps in a way, because you don't want to leave people out of any one of those three steps, right? At least the right people.
Yeah, exactly. Forms change all the time. It's important to be flexible and making sure that everyone knows when things are changing.
Exactly, yeah. Very good point. Thank you. Stephanie, you mentioned sort of reflecting cultural diversity and respecting each other's different cultures in a plan. Do you think that would be part of the first step of getting ready, the second step engaging, or the third step creating?
I would say that would be part of being engaged, because you like, I need to be aware and like respect the different cultures. I mean, I can get ready for it. I guess ready and engage would be a big part of it, because I'm going to have to get permission from myself introducing and like different cultures. And sometimes there could be one or two persons in the community that is part of, for instance, we have one couple from Italy, and I would like to introduce their culture, but I'm going to have to let them know this is what I am doing, and if there's any kind of input, and they might just say, no, we don't really want to, we just want to keep our religion to ourselves or our culture to ourselves, so I'd rather get ready for that and get the permission before I go, because myself, I'm Dene, and I don't know much about their culture, so I would rather be ready and get prepared for talking to them first. So there's a lot of pre-planning, not just pre-planning, but getting ready to plan, and I would like to get permission before I do anything like that, because they might be very private people, so I would like to respect that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that, I think that applies to anybody in your community, right? When you want to perhaps invite them to be involved, that's part of the getting ready, and then, you know, thinking about who you want to have involved too is also getting ready, so that you've got, if you're going to have a planning team, if you're doing a bigger plan, for example, like a strategic plan, you might want a team that sort of represents some of the different cultures or the diversity. You know, you might want an elder on your planning team, you might want a youth on your planning team. And I think I'm talking more about, when I suggest that, I'm talking about bigger plans, not, you know, how you plan a single program, but it might be how you plan out your whole year, or, you know, some communities plan for a new facility, and what does that look like? So,
thanks, Stephanie. Nathan, you mentioned, you know, sort of keeping people updated as to what's happening as we're sort of rolling out the plan. Do you think that's part of the first step, the second, or the third step, or is it an ongoing piece?
Ongoing, and I guess it could be included in the first step as well, too, just because, you know, before you approach people with the plan, you kind of want to have it hashed out.
Yeah, it's interesting how you can say that just about any of these things you've mentioned fit into any of the steps, which is good too. So you can see sort of there's some movement between each of the steps. And Ethan, you mentioned that you would want to make sure that any planning has community input. Which step, if you had to pick one step, which one do you think really reflects involving the community the most, the ready, the engage, or the create?
I think it would be engage, as we're giving input and interacting with the community.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that that's a really important part, because you sort of planned out what you're going to do, and now you get people's ideas, and you share them, and you sift through them, and then you create the plan from there. So thanks, Ethan. So Kelly, Nadine, and Serena, I'll just put it out there. What we did is at the beginning of the call, we just shared something that we thought was really important in a planning process. And then what we've done is we've taken it and said, you know, does it fit a little bit more into the first step of getting ready, the second step of engaging, or the third step of creating? So I don't know if you guys want to share something that when you're doing planning, and you can do it, share it together or point at each other for one person to talk, something that you think is an important part of a planning process.
Yeah, this is Nadine here. So for us, like, we try and provide programs that the community actually, like, expresses that they want. So it's kind of a step between ready and engaged, because during programming, we get feedback after programming for future programming ideas. So it's kind of like a combination of the two steps, like all the ideas for programming to be kind of for and by the community.
Yeah, and that's an interesting piece, because that shows us how circular our planning and programming in recreation actually is. So if you happen to, if any of you have the presentation slides in front of you, slide number 8 has a circular format where planning a variety of programs and services. So the bigger planning piece moves into the more specific designing and delivering a program and events, things like that, which flows into evaluation, which flows back to our bigger plan. So thanks for bringing that up, Nadine, because it is, we're always learning from what we do and using that to plan in the future. So really, really important. Thanks, everyone. That's a good conversation in regards to the different steps. And again, you can see some of those steps are described a little bit more on slide 18 and slide 19. So a plan always wants to know, or should always know, as I mentioned, what you want to accomplish and how you will get there. And as Megan pointed out, it's always let others know that too. So on slide 20, you can see there's an example from the municipality of San Akilulac, which is all on one page. It's just, it flows nicely. It sort of gives you a vision, a mission, things like that. But slide 20 encourages you, and the end of the subsequent slides, to encourage you to choose a framework that works for the type of plan you're going to design. So words are important, but sometimes a visual framework that looks more like a map or a path can help other people understand what your plan actually is. So I really like sort of drawing lines and circles and having something that's not just one word after the next word after the next word. So there's different ways to show your plan. So if you happen to have the slides in front of you, slide 21 shows a framework for an outcomes-based plan. And you may, especially if you deal with federal government funding, you might have heard of something called a logic model. And logic models aren't necessarily my favorite things, but they are a way to show, if you can see the slide, it shows a situation, what you want to change, what you're going to put into that change, what you're going to do, and what will result from that. So that's kind of a logic model. And you can switch it around. You can, you know, make it from a circle in and out. You can make it in a series of boxes. But an outcomes-based logic model basically says we're going to, put inputs in. So inputs are resources that you have invested into a project, like staff, money, materials, sports equipment, things like that. And then you say with those inputs, you're going to do certain activities, and activities are things that you're going to do to carry out a project. So you might advertise your program. You might offer a workshop. You might deliver some training. You might run an after-school program. Those are the activities that you do. And then outputs are things that you actually produce, and they usually happen fairly quickly, and you can usually count them. So an output could be that you have 6 sessions for youth to come and learn how to do beading. That could be an output. And then the outcomes are longer term. They're really the reason why we're in this for recreation. And so they're longer term changes in knowledge or awareness or skill, or behavior even. So maybe people change their physical activity patterns, or maybe they eat more healthy, or maybe they're out on the land a little bit more because they've learned, more skills around that as well. So usually a logic model framework is linear. It's sort of like a machine. Something goes in, something happens, and something comes out the other end. It is good for you to know what a logic model is in case you get asked ever to do one. On slide 22, if you can see that one, there's a framework or an outline for a strategic plan, and it's a little bit different. You can think of a strategic plan sort of as something that is a little bit longer term. So if you have an official community plan or a plan for your community, that's a bit more like a strategic plan. It might be for 5 or 10 years. And usually in a strategic plan, you begin with sort of a vision, and that reflects what people's hopes and dreams are. And then we might move to values, so things that are really important. So Stephanie mentioned cultural diversity. That's like a value, like we value people's cultures and we want to share that and respect it. You know, speak out on the land is another value for people as well. If you have a mission, that usually describes what an organization does, for whom, and how. And then goals can be sort of those broad things that sometimes we write them as specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely, but they're broad strategies that we want to do. Like, we want to offer programs for youth in our community to keep them busy after school and in the evening. That would be a goal. And then objectives are more specific actions or ways to achieve the goal. So for the example of the youth one, you might say we're going to run an after-school program from 3:30 to 5:30 on Mondays and Wednesdays, and we're going to run a drop-in program for older youth on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings. So that could be an objective that falls under the goal of providing recreation for young people. As I mentioned, a strategic plan is often broader and lasts longer than what you might get in an outcomes or logic type model. So what I'd like you to think about now, and we're going to start with Stephanie this round. We're going to go Stephanie, Nathan, and then to Kelly, Nadine, and Serena, Ethan, and Megan in our circle. I'd like you to think of an example of when you might use either an outcomes-based framework or logic model or a strategic planning framework. So you don't have to have an example for both, but just think of which one, pick one of those, pick either the strategic planning one or the outcomes one, and then share an example of when you might use it. And not to put you on the spot right away, Stephanie, I'll answer that first, just to give you a little bit of a rough idea. So I had to recently do a logic model or outcomes-based model for some funding from the Public Health Agency of Canada. And they specifically wanted that. It's for a project, so it has a beginning and an end. And it didn't involve a lot of community input, so we chose to use like a logic model or an outcomes-based framework for that. So Stephanie, do you have an example of when you might use one of those types of frameworks?
I would say I was actually thinking of the activity that is due on Sunday is community wellness / self-sustainability with the, we had another greenhouse built in Enterprise. And I'm working with a fellow, he is a gardener, and he knows a lot about growing vegetables. Last year was very successful, and I think due to the cost of gas, the cost of food that is coming up right away because of COVID, I think this will be really good this summer to run these programs, especially to educate the youth, the adults, and the elders to learn how to grow their own seedlings, their vegetables, any, you know, herbs kind of thing. And I think that's more of an outcome because as we're teaching the youth and the adults, they could be teaching their cousins, their families. They can be teaching, you know, every year the kids grow more and more, and then they might get more into it. And I thought that was a really good one for the upcoming activity that is due this week.
Awesome. That's great. That's a good example because it's something fairly specific. You've taken the broad sort of vision of community well-being and said specifically we're going to look at a greenhouse where we're growing and teaching people that. So, you know, what are the outcomes we get from that? So that a logic model or an outcomes-based framework would work well for that. So thank you for sharing that. Nathan, do you have an example of when you might use either a strategic plan framework or an outcomes-based framework?
Yeah, I'd say something for, say, like a fundraising fundraising for like a youth trip, like for a sporting event or something. I feel like that one could almost be both, where like you're strategically planning the financials of the trip and planning how many and like, you know, how many and how often you're gonna have like fundraisers and stuff like that, and then it's like outcome because the youth, like, you know, get like a nice trip and good experience out of it, and the youth will also participate in the fundraisers, like, you know, kind of learning leadership skills along the way, I guess.
Yeah, so that's a good example with a logic model framework. So, you know, you have something that you want to do. You put something in, like some effort for fundraising, some organizing, some activities. Things happen, and then stuff comes out. You get money, but also youth learn, you know, fundraising skills. They grow together. They have a trip. So that's kind of like that. You know, it's like an engine in a car, right? It only runs if you put gas in and then turn it on, and then you get to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Same type of idea. So thanks so much, Nathan. That's a good example. Let's go, Kelly, Nadine, and Serena, and you can share a couple of examples if you want, or just one person can speak on behalf of all three if you prefer. But do you have an example of when you might use either an outcome-based framework or a strategic planning framework?
Hi, sorry, could you repeat the question again? On our end, it's a little bit fuzzy.
Okay, so the question is, if you think of an outcomes-based framework or a logic model as compared to a strategic planning framework, do you have an example of when you might use one or the other of those? You don't have to share for both. And what would the example be? So Stephanie mentioned that she would, you know, specifically the project of a greenhouse and programs around growing, she would probably use the logic model framework. Nathan suggested a fundraising activity with youth that led to a trip. The logic model framework would work well for that. So I'm just wondering if you have an example of one of those types of planning frameworks.
Yeah, maybe you have one.
Okay. So I guess, like, depending on what the project is, like, I'd say for, you know, something that's shorter term where you've got really clearly defined objectives and outcome framework would be, you know, better suited because things are more clear. To me, like a strategic plan would be something where you've got really broad, not necessarily like tangible goals, kind of like more things that are like would revolve around like values and building on values and dreams and things like that. So, for example, like maybe a garden club, which is what I use, I think would be great for an outcome base because things are very tangible and measurable, kind of like we're going to plant the seeds and grow food, and, you know, by doing this we're going to learn about nutrition and growing food and food security in the north, and it's like measurable and you can kind of see it clearly and you see the progress, whereas, you know, a strategic plan for, you know, say building knowledge and things like that, I think it'd take a more strategic plan because the outcomes that you're looking for aren't so definitive.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I think, you know, a logic model or an outcomes-based plan can actually fit within a strategic plan. So one of your goal areas, you know, might be to create more opportunities to engage youth in learning and growing and developing through recreation. And so you may have some smaller projects like a greenhouse project or a mountain bike project or something like that that fit underneath that overall strategic plan. So I like how you explain that one might be a little bit broader, you know, give you a bit more room for flexibility versus the other that's a bit more tangible and shorter term. Thank you. Anything else to add from Kelly or Serena? You don't have to if you don't want to. I'm not putting you on the spot. Sorry.
No, I think we're all good. Thank you.
Okay. Ethan, looking over to you, do you have an example of when you might use either an outcomes-based framework / logic model or a strategic planning framework?
my mind went kind of blank on this question, so I was wondering if I can just pass.
For sure. Most definitely. And Megan, any thoughts about when you might use one or the other?
Yeah, so I help coach basketball for high school girls. And basically coming up, we have virtual tryouts for major games that are coming up. And some of the girls are interested in trying out for the team. So we know what the coaches are looking for, and we know how the girls play. So now it's about getting them from point A to point B. And for that, I would use an outcome-based logic model to see the results that we are looking for.
That's an awesome example. And when you put it in a written thing like that, you can also use that to go and get some money to help you with it too, right?
Yeah,
but that's very, yeah, and that's very tangible. I mean, you know, if you think of basketball, you might want to have X number of young people in your community trying out. From that, you might want to have X number who actually make the team. But then, you know, you might have some outcomes that are a bit broader, like instill values for a healthier lifestyle, instill a love of sport, right? So I think you can capture a lot of things, as you mentioned, through an outcome-based or logic model framework. So thank you. One example from, I know I've mentioned this already, but from Nunavut, so Ethan and Megan, you're probably familiar, well, I know Megan, you are for sure, is the Nunavut Sport Physical Activity and Recreation Framework. And that absolutely is an example of a strategic long-term plan. So, you know, we collected input from people from all over Nunavut to create a vision. We identified values that were aligned with the Inuit societal values and looked at five broad goals and then objectives under those goals. So that's an example of a strategic plan, if you wanted to see an example of one. And that's a pretty recent one. So, so there's different ways of planning. So I just would like to have another short conversation before we wrap up the call. If you take a look, if you scroll through to slide 24, if you're on the slide, just not, no big deal. So slide 24 offers an example of an Indigenous planning framework. And what I love about this is it's just so different to the linear framework that is a logic model. And Indigenous planning uses more Indigenous ways to achieve outcomes that are defined by Indigenous people and communities. And so, you know, here I am talking to those of you who are Indigenous, and I'm not Indigenous, but this is what I've learned. So I'm looking for you to share your experiences, too, on the next part of our call. In my mind, at least, are some of what I've read about different ways or some of my experiences with Indigenous ways of planning is that there's a lot of recognition and of traditional knowledge of cultural identity, of customary law, and also looking at the world through an Indigenous lens as compared to, you know, this linear lens that I often associate with a logic model. So, you know, again, I'm coming from a different perspective. This is my outside perspective, but I do like circular things. I like things that connect. But what I'd like to ask is if we can take a few minutes to share our perspective on how culture influences the way we approach planning. So Stephanie, at the beginning of the call, raised, you know, I think you mentioned, Stephanie, that you're Dene, but you have people with so many different cultures in your community. So I'm wondering if we can look at more, you know, Northern and Indigenous, and if you have any experiences with Indigenous ways of planning, I'm wondering if you can share a few words of wisdom or things that you've learned from your own experience as far as how culture influences approaches to planning or what considerations influence planning with Indigenous communities in your region, because there is a difference across the North, too. I'll give you a little example while we're thinking about it. And Nathan, I'm going to put you on the spot first because I said we'd alternate how we go around. So after I give you an example, we'll go to Nathan and then Kelly, Nadine, and Serena, and then Ethan, Megan, and Stephanie. So here's the question, and I'll give you sort of what I was thinking about with an example. So the question again then is, how does culture influence the way we approach planning? And what considerations would influence planning with Indigenous communities or people in your region? And so for my example is probably about 5 to 10 years ago, I worked really closely with the Council of Yukon First Nations, and I was invited to facilitate a Yukon First Nations wellness plan. And at the time, one of the things I learned so very clearly was that although I was engaging communities throughout the Yukon, the information that I gathered for the plan didn't belong to me. It belonged to the community. So even though the community was willing to share it, it was still their information and their knowledge. And it took me a while as a non-Indigenous person to shift my thinking that way. And so that's something I've brought forward. And when I plan for some of our training things in Recreation North or in other aspects of what I do for work, I often try and remember how important it is to respect the community knowledge that comes through and respect the community as experts on what's going on in their own community. So that's something that I've learned. So Nathan, I know you grew up in Iqaluit and you're in Fort Liard. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or words of wisdom for the rest of us on, you know, what we should consider when we're planning in Indigenous communities or with Indigenous people.
Yeah, I'd say like a similar thing, just since being here in Fort Liard, like you know, very very different culture and stuff compared to where I grew up. And I usually just check for as much input and any extra knowledge if I'm planning on doing any programming, like, beforehand, just to make sure, like, you know, it could be, like, it never caught on in the community in the past, or it could, you know, have some, or there could be, like, you know, some left-out bit of culture if I don't, like, you know, ask around. So an example would be, like, Arctic sports. We have, like, our Dene Games and Arctic sports kit. I think it's from the ASC. And, I think there's a couple of games that are played here in Fort Liard that I'd never heard of. But, there's a local lady in town, and she, I guess she knows how to play them. And then, once we set up the Northern Games, then, we're also going to look at getting her also, like, instructing the games that were, traditional to here, I guess.
Yeah, so that's interesting, right? So, like, moving from one community to another and just the differences in that community and involving people in what's meaningful and relevant for their community. Thanks, Nathan. Let's move on to Kelly, Nadine, and Serena. Do you have any thoughts to share about, you know, how planning or how culture influences the planning or considerations in your community or with other Indigenous communities? Or in general, like if you've had experience, just in general, maybe each of you have a different experience about how local culture might influence your approaches to planning, or you might have some words of wisdom for planning when you're working with an Indigenous community or with Indigenous people.
Sorry, it is like we're having a really hard time understanding a lot of what's being said. I don't know if it's like really muffled, but it's really unclear, the sound quality on our end, so I apologize. The question is how does culture, tie into planning for us?
Yes, yeah, I just unplugged my headset, so I don't know if that's any clearer or not. Is that any better?
Yes, that's way better.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, I'm going to remember that in the future. I've tried so many different headsets, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. So my apologies, everybody. It's hard to hold my phone because then I can't write and type at the same time. But anyways, we're almost at the end of the call, so I'll hold it for the rest of the call, and I will remember that in the future. So the question was, how does culture influence how we approach planning, or what considerations or words of wisdom do you think should influence planning with Indigenous communities in your region or in your experience?
I think, well, because we work with Income and Done and we have a lot of Indigenous people here working out, I know that a lot of our colleagues from different departments reach out to us so that they could be with the youth and also teach, like, traditional medicines and also making camps during the season for, like, it's harvesting camp, or it's like a spring camp or whatever. And it's really nice to have those people like reach out, because sometimes we don't know those things, like that time of year.
I don't know.
Yeah, so like the seasonal nature.
Yeah.
It's like we collaborate a lot with different departments so that we can pull as much knowledge into our programming as possible. And then I think it also touches on what I said previously of the feedback. So we get feedback from the community or feedback from the youth that we're interacting with, of things that they would like to see. So it's really community-led and informed, because there might be things that we're overlooking or not thinking of that they would really love to see in our programming here for them. So it's just great to have it informed by the people who are benefiting from the programming.
And that really is like a part of our mandate, is that recreation programming is cultural. So yeah, like what Serena was saying, like you have to pull in resources from other departments and from the community to be able to include culture, which is kind of has to be part of all of it, because that's like kind of the point of our rec department.
Exactly. So I think that's something that, you know, if I, like I did grow up in Vancouver. I left when I was 18, but that's not something I learned in Vancouver, the importance of drawing on resources from other parts of the community so that you really can get a rich cultural experience in what you do. So I think that, you know, you led, or you used the word community-led or informed by community. And Ethan mentioned that right off the bat at the beginning of the call, is how important it is to, you know, listen to the community and get information from the community. And I think that that's something that, you know, across the North and in our small communities and especially in our Indigenous communities, it's very respectful, I think, to do that, right? But it also makes for a much richer experience for people participating in programs. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well.
Much more. Yeah, I think there's... Sorry, go ahead. It's hard to explain sometimes, and some people just sort of intuitively understand, and other people it takes a little longer to learn. But, yeah, thank you. Okay, and Ethan popped in the chat. You know, Ethan, I think that exactly what you said early on about the importance of drawing information out from your community and really listening to your community, that's a really important consideration for anything we do in recreation in our small communities. And as Kelly, Nadine, and Serena mentioned, you know, that helps you sort of reflect the culture that's important in your community. Megan, how about for yourself? How does culture influence approaches to planning, or what considerations influence planning with Indigenous communities in your region?
Pretty similar to other answers, in that I think it's really important to know what's going on at what time of the year, especially for like timelines and like deadlines and stuff like that. Both informal and formal meetings, like It's important to know when the hamlet days are. It's important to know when the hunting seasons are. It's important to know when people meet for games and stuff, just so that you avoid conflicting timelines or, like, force people to have to choose between one thing or another. And just being aware that, like, for example, it's spring and it's, like, warming up, so we already know that we won't get as many attendance numbers because everyone's out on the land. And just being aware of when those things are going to impact the people involved.
Yeah, and you know what I found really interesting working across the north is that those seasonal cycles are different depending on where you are. And so sometimes, you know, like things happen differently in the, you know, the eastern, like maybe over in Pang versus over in Inuvik or down in Burwash Landing or something. So it is a lot of understanding, you know, the regions as well, so that, you know, we just don't make assumptions that winter means that it starts in November, right? Because in some places it may or may not. So thanks for, and then the cultural implications of those seasons. So thanks for sharing that, Megan. And let's come back to Stephanie then. Stephanie, you know, I know you have a very unique community in Enterprise with, you know, not very many people, but a wide variety of cultures, but also, you know, Indigenous cultures in your region being, I think, primarily probably Dene. How does culture influence your approaches to planning, and what considerations might influence how you plan with Indigenous communities or people in your region?
For myself, I would have to say communication with the other communities. In Enterprise, we are the first community from Alberta that is met, like with tourism coming from down south, and that is actually something that I'm also working on, is trying to connect and communicate with local communities and seeing what kind of events and activities that they have going on in their community. And this is actually a project that I'm working on, is kind of building a pamphlet, something that we can offer. Hopefully we can get a tourism booth up and going soon. That's kind of in the works. It's part of our community strategic plan. I'm hoping that I can have some input to have tourists coming up north to stop in and, oh, what's this? Oh, what's going on? Well, hey, that's going to happen in Providence in 2 days. Hey, let's go check it out. And to introduce, like, their local businesses, accommodations, amenities, and, like, just trying to communicate and kind of be the welcoming place of the North. That's one thing. And I do want to connect with other cultures and respective cultures. Like, we have Ukrainians, we have Italians, we have French, we have, like, it just goes on and on of the amount of different types of cultures that are in these communities, including my own community. So that is something that is very important to me, and I'd like to familiarize myself and also with any kind of Aboriginal games, Indigenous games that are going on in local communities, and just trying to connect with them. Oh, what's going on over there? Can you give me information, posters, anything that I can post on our Facebook site or print it out on posters? And as tourism starts to open up again, which I'm hoping it will, we can, I always say we, but right now in the recreational department, it's just me.
That's right.
So when I say we, it's me, myself, and I.
Well, thanks so much for sharing. Thanks for taking the time to share that, Stephanie. I just looked at my clock and I noticed we're right on the hour, so I'm just going to, like, really quickly wrap up, because often people, you know, have other things that they need to move on to in their day. So I just wanted to point out that as slide 25 shows, there are lots of different planning frameworks. So take some time this week to become familiar with the examples in the slides and in the Explore More section. And I noticed I hadn't added, but I'm going to add the Nunavut Sport Physical Activity and Recreation Framework, a link to it as well, because that's another really good example that you might be interested to look at. And if you're in Nunavut and you haven't had a look at it, be sure to take a look at it. Remember that planning is something you do every day at home, at work, and in other Rec North learning events as well. So what you have to do then for Sunday is you can choose you're going to be planning something using one type of framework. You don't have to use a certain one, but I'd like you to prepare a plan for a situation that recreation could address in your community. And you can choose one of the frameworks, or you can create your own format. And it doesn't have to be writing. If you like to use pictures and images, you're more than welcome to do that too. So that's what's due on Sunday. If you have any questions about it, please stay on the line after I finish the conference call recording and I can answer your questions. And then please remember to also fill out the feedback form in activity number 7. I think that we have a break for a week after this one. Let me just check my calendar here quickly just so that we all know where we're at next. And then we will start with PE 102, which is Create Positive Program Experiences, on Monday, April 4th. So you do have a break next week, so no conference call next week. So, Masito, merci, thank you so much, Kwana. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and stay on the call if you have any questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Have a good day. Have a good day.
Thanks so much.